Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Missile Text, 'Twas the Text Before Christmas, by Whitney Dineen and Melanie Summers, narrated by Avery Reed and Alexander Sendes. Chapter 1. Holly. Yes, Mom, I had a great trip, I say while sorting the laundry. The south of France is beautiful this time of year. I rest the phone between my shoulder and ear and whisper to Faith, Nana's on the phone. Do you want to say hi? My niece shakes her blonde curls at me, which makes perfect sense since my mom doesn't know who she is. I watch as Faith tugs a sweater over her teddy bear Coco's head. Poor kid needs more family than just me. No, Mom, I don't have to perform at Lincoln Center today. I'm no more a performer than I am a world traveler, but my mother has early-onset dementia, and she doesn't know this. I pretend to be whatever her brain tells her I am. Sometimes I'm her daughter, sometimes she's my daughter, sometimes I'm the housekeeper she's never had but always dreamed of. Those conversations are borderline funny, because it turns out she would have been a total taskmaster if she'd had domestic help. I've tried to make the best of our ever-evolving relationship. On good days, I even half convince myself that it's nice to pretend my life is more glamorous than it is. Who am I kidding? A trip upstate to stay at the Clacker Cave Motel would be more exciting than living in a dodgy apartment in Queens. The neighborhood is decent, but our place could use new paint, new floors, new plumbing. I'm killing myself to make ends meet. But not only do I not have the money to upgrade, I still don't have enough to keep Faith in Dartmouth, the preschool for gifted children that I managed to get her into 3 months ago. She's on a scholarship. Read, poor child with potential. But even with that, it's $500 per month that I don't have. At the time, I was just adding online travel agent to my several side hustles and thought it was going to be the answer to all my prayers. But so far, it's cost me more than I've made. Okay, I'll tell the prince you send your best, Mom. I'm sure he'll mail you more chocolates soon. I end the call feeling like I've just taken a spin or 12 around a blender. Sadly, without any vodka or rum. As much as I would like to think I'm a self-sufficient, capable woman, at the moment, I wouldn't mind Prince Charming coming to my rescue. Faith, I tell my niece, why don't we go down to the deli and get sandwiches for lunch? Her eyes brighten so much, I feel guilty that we don't have more treats around here.
Really? Can we get chips, too?
I've been Faith's guardian ever since my sister Joy and her husband Tom were killed in a car accident 3 years ago. She was only 2. I curse my brother-in-law for the millionth time for canceling his life insurance policy. I was 25 when they died and could barely take care of myself. Now that I've added a child to the mix, things have really gotten tight. Believe me when I say kids do not get cheaper as they age. Chips and lemonade, I tell her like I'm suddenly Daddy Warbucks.
Oh, Aunt Holly. Thank you.
She jumps up and starts to dance around our tiny living room. Let's take our wash down first, and we'll go from there. I point to her room, which is really the walk-in closet in my room. Go get your laundry.
Can Aunt Tony come with us?
She asks. Tony has been my best friend since we were 8 years old when she accidentally broke my nose with a ping pong paddle. We bonded over blood and stitches. Handing Faith my phone, I say, why don't you call her and ask? I finish sorting my whites while she calls. I love the sound of her sweet voice. It gives me hope and breaks my heart at the same time. While I have the most darling little girl in my life, she needed my responsible, put-together sister to raise her, not her auntie who can't seem to catch a break.
Aunt Tony, it's me.
Faith says into the phone, sounding like a mini grown-up. She's 5, going on 15.
Aunt Holly is taking me out for a sandwich. I want you to come too.
She listens to her for a minute before asking me,
What time?
Tell her 30 minutes at Ferrantelli's. Faith repeats my words and then hands me the phone.
I want to wash my tennis shoes, but I don't have anything else to put on my feet. Can I wear my slippers?
No, wear your tennies. We'll stop off and buy you another pair of shoes while we're out. At this point, what's another $20 on the old credit card?
Wow. Did we win the lottery?
She asks, her eyes wide. Throwing a towel at her, I say, What does Auntie say about the lotto?
It's a tax for the uninformed.
Exactly. Now get me your clothes or we're not going anywhere. She runs out of the room as fast as her feet will carry her. I schlep the basket down 3 flights to the laundry room while my niece drags her laundry sack behind her. Thump, thump, thump. It goes down every step. Mrs. Firestone is taking her clothes out of the dryer when we walk in. She looks up and says,
There's my best girl.
Then she opens her arms for Faith to run into them. Mrs. Firestone is like a grandmother to Faith and is an absolute godsend to me. She takes care of my niece whenever I need her to. I try not to rely on her too much, as I don't have the money to pay her, but if she doesn't see us for a couple of days, she knocks on our door so she can get her Faith time in, as she calls it.
I was thinking I could come over and clean for you this afternoon, I say.
Honey, you don't have to clean for me. I don't get the place that dirty.
It's the least I can do, I tell her. And it truly is. Mrs. Firestone brings us supper a couple times a week. She makes cookies for us, and she watches Faith. All I do is take out her trash and clean her apartment. We have the better end of the deal by far.
We're getting a sandwich out today, Faith tells our neighbor. Do you want us to bring you one?
I had such a huge breakfast, I'm not sure I'll be able to eat another bite all day, she says.
Then she pulls out her coin purse and opens it. She hands Faith a $20 bill.
I found this in the wash, if you can believe it. Why don't you treat your aunt to lunch?
I feel tears prickle behind my eyes. We're okay, Mrs. Firestone, but we appreciate the offer. I really, really want to take the money, but I hate feeling like a charity case. Our neighbor shakes her head.
Didn't your mother ever tell you that it was bad luck to turn down found money?
No, she never did. I look at Faith, who's staring between me and her friend. I say,
I guess you better take it, Faithy. We don't need any bad luck.
My niece cheers before folding up the money and shoving it into the pocket of her blue jeans.
It's getting to be winter out there, Mrs. Firestone says while packing up her newly folded clothes. You better get your heavy coats out soon.
Gah, Faith's coat is getting tight on her, and mine is so old it's starting to get holes. With 2 new coats, along with Christmas presents to purchase from me and Santa Claus, who am I kidding? I'm never going to be able to afford that preschool tuition. We hurry to start our 3 loads of laundry and then head out the front door of our building.
I think I'm going to get a meatball hero. How about you? Faith asks.
I don't know. I think I might get peanut butter and pickles. She laughs out loud.
Why not pastrami and boogers?
Yum, I tell her as I continue our favorite game. How about whale and water chestnut?
Bologna and bubblegum.
She's laughing so hard she stops to slap her leg. When she settles down, she asks,
If you could go out to a fancy restaurant, what would you order?
I'm not sure I even know what fancy food is, I tell her. But I think I read somewhere that the French love snails.
Maybe I'd get those. She stops in her tracks and stares up at me, the chilly wind blowing her wild pale curls onto her cheek.
You're making that up, right?
No, for real, I tell her. It's called escargot. They pay a fortune for it. I take her hand and start to hurry along the sidewalk so we can get out of the cold.
Yuck! In that case, let's stay poor, she tells me.
My gut aches at the fact that she understands our financial status so well. But when you're dealing with a child as perceptive as Faith, secrets are hard to keep. Well, how about we end up being in the middle? Not so rich that we have to eat snails, but with enough money for a meal where they bring the food to your table.
Deal,
she says, hopping over a big crack in the cement.
What will you get when we go?
Where? I ask, dodging a double stroller being pushed by a bleary-eyed woman.
At the restaurant that brings the food to us?
Faith asks, looking up at me like my very last marble has rolled into the storm drain. I think I'd want Italian food. Maybe lasagna or spaghetti, but definitely garlic bread. I start to salivate. How about you?
Megan, from my preschool, said that she went out and ordered macaroni and cheese, but not the kind from a box,
she says, her face filled with wonder.
Apparently, it's got about 50 times the cheese as the box kind. Megan said it's real cheese, too, not powdered garbage.
The more I hear about Megan, the more I want to pop her uppity mother in her cute little surgically enhanced nose. When the feeling wears off, I just feel sad that Faith thinks homemade mac and cheese is exotic. I have got to figure out how to make some more money so that she doesn't have to be poor for her whole childhood. When we walk into Ferrantelli's, we see Tony standing in line. She's holding our place, which is good, because the line wraps around the room nearly twice. Everyone wants to eat out on Saturday.
Hey, girlies.
She turns to hug us.
Lunch is on me today. No way. Aunt Tony, I'm buying,
Faith says.
Your money's no good here, Tony tells her.
Then she looks at me.
We're celebrating.
What are we celebrating? I could really use some good news right about now, so I hope it doesn't have anything to do with the Jets winning. I couldn't care less about sports.
I may have figured out a way to solve your cash flow issue.
Please, God, let it not involve lap dances. Tony's sister works at a gentleman's club, and the last time I complained about money, she suggested asking Tanya if there were any openings. I give her a skeptical look while we take a couple steps forward in the line. Tony immediately knows what I'm thinking of and whispers,
Not that, although, cha-ching, Tanya's pulling in 800 in tips on the weekends alone. She figured out this new way to slide down the pole. Apparently, it's quite the hit. What pole?
Faith asks in her loud preschool voice.
And how does Auntie Tanya slide down it so special?
I glower at Tony, who gives me an apologetic look.
You've got such good hearing, kiddo.
The one at the big park, I tell her.
Oh, yeah, that's the best pole in the city,
Faith announces authoritatively. We're next in line, so by the time we order, get our food, and snag a table up against the window, I've all but forgotten about Tony's latest get-rich-quick plans. We peel off our jackets and breathe a collective sigh of relief as the air becomes less stifling. After we hang them over the wooden chairs, we finally settle down to eat. Faith unwraps her sandwich and carefully smooths out the paper to turn it into a makeshift plate while I open her bag of plain chips for her.
Okay, so I've got three words for you,
Tony says, her words muffled by her tuna salad on rye.
Rent a pal.
What? I ask, pouring out the chips. Rent a Pal. It's a new website that people can advertise themselves on. You can make anywhere from 20 to 50 bucks an hour just hanging out with someone who needs a friend, she says. That sounds really sketchy. It's not. I read an article about it on BuzzFeed. Totally above board. For the most part, Tony says. Come on, for 50 bucks an hour, there's got to be a catch. I tell her, having my first bite of my clubhouse. Oh, yes. Salty bacon goodness with just the right amount of melted cheese, crisp lettuce, fresh tomato, turkey, and ham. It's my first meet for the entire week, so I'm going to enjoy every bite.
Well, I guess some of the people have some odd hobbies that they want you to participate in, Tony admits. Like this one old lady who wants someone to praise her while she licks stamps during their hangout sessions.
I narrow my eyes. Okay, yep, let's strike Rent-A-Pal off the list.
50 bucks an hour, Tony says slowly. You're telling me you can't say good job to someone for that kind of cash?
You mean a total weirdo, I say.
Auntie Holly, you said it's not nice to call someone a weirdo,
Faith tells me, giving me a look more suited to a 60-year-old librarian. You're right, Faith. That wasn't kind of me. I wipe some red sauce off her chin, and I turn back to Tony. I really appreciate you coming up with ideas. Honestly, I do. But I can't see myself wanting to get involved in that sort of work.
All right, Tony says with a shrug. But your insurance is due soon, and last time we talked, you couldn't cover it.
Insurance is our code word for the Dartmouth tuition fee. Who names a preschool after an Ivy League university? Talk about overselling yourself. I lose my appetite the second the topic of insurance comes up. I was supposed to have paid for the next semester already, and I've just been sent my third reminder notice. If I don't scrape it together by Christmas, they're going to rescind her invitation. I know, but I should have it soon. That woman I've been trying to sell the Disney cruise package to is making her decision today, and honestly, I think this one is going to happen. Family reunion for 20 people. 20. It'll cover the insurance for sure. Tony's eyebrows knit together. The last three sure thing vacation packages I was about to sell all fell through. I'm lucky to have such a good friend who cares so much. Not only about me, but about Faith, too. Needing a break from my problems, I shift the conversation to Tony's job as the executive assistant to Archibald Harrington III, bazillionaire investment banker and workaholic extraordinaire. Tony's always got stories about him that make Faith and me laugh.
His Highness has decided we all need to work through Thanksgiving this year, she says, rolling her eyes. Apparently, hostile takeovers don't care if you want to eat pumpkin pie.
Seriously? I ask. You should just quit, or at least threaten to quit so he'll give you the holiday off. She slides a chip off Faith's wrap and pops it in her mouth with a wild grin on her face.
Mr. Harrington's not the kind of man you play chicken with, or as he would say, with whom you play chicken. If I threaten to quit, I have to be prepared to walk, and it's too good of a job for that.
I let out a sigh that's meant to permanently expel my frustration at the ways of the world. That's why the rich just get richer.
Trill, Tony says. Then she smiles at me. Which is why I'm going to learn everything he knows about getting rich. Then we'll do it too.
I'm pretty sure being born one of the heirs to the Harrington fortune is step one, and neither of us was lucky enough to be born into that family. I say, chewing on my bottom lip instead of my sandwich.
Buck up, little camper, she says. And remember, we can do this.
We just have to embody our inner Oprah. Oprah's our touchstone for going from rags to riches. She did it on her own without compromising her values. You're right, I say, glancing at my niece, who is now building a teetering chip tower. I can be Oprah. Yes, you can, Holly. You just have to figure out what path is going to lead you there. And that's the problem.
Chapter 2. Archie. No, Mother, I already told you I don't have time to meet you in the south of France. I'm right in the middle of a huge deal, I say, standing in front of the wall of windows in my corner office. The view from the 59th floor is one of the best in Manhattan. If you look slightly to the left, you can see straight across the Brooklyn Bridge. Besides, I'm not even sure why you're there this time of year. It's so dreary.
So is New York in November, but I don't see you jetting off to the tropics,
she tells me, her upper crust East Coast accent slightly more pronounced, which happens whenever she gets upset with me, which is quite often.
This will be the fourth Thanksgiving you will have missed. The holidays are for family, Archibald, not finances, she says.
Oh yes, just the way the Pilgrims did it, in a beachfront Michelin star restaurant in Antibes.
I don't appreciate the sarcasm, Archibald,
she tells me in a tone that says I'm still your mother, young man.
You're just like your father, and you're going to end up like him, too, working yourself into an early grave without ever having lived,
she tells me for the 1,000th time. No, I'm not. Unlike father, I don't chain-smoke Cuban cigars and eat red meat at every meal, I tell her. I work out regularly and get at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. At my last checkup, the doctor told me my heart is more like a 16-year-old elite athlete than a 30-year-old investment banker.
That's not the point.
What is the point, then? Because I really have to run. I glance back at my desk and the massive prospectus I need to comb through again.
The point is that you're missing out on everything. Your brother and Willow are already here with your namesake. You haven't even met little Archie yet, and he's almost 6 months old.
I'm not a baby guy. I'll catch the kid when he's able to control his bodily functions. I'm just being difficult on purpose. He won't remember anyway. I'm late for a meeting. Say hello to everyone for me.
Archie.
Her tone turns in the direction of pleading. I'll see you soon, Mom.
You mean if I book an appointment with your secretary and show up at your office?
She asks. Don't be silly. You don't have to book an appointment.
You'd take time to see me if I just walked into your work.
She asks, sounding skeptical. I would have you relocated to the staff room where you could relax comfortably until my day ends. I'm only teasing, but she won't like it. She ignores my last comment and says,
You should know that I've had a call from your godfather. Apparently, they're quite put out by your, how did he put it? Oh, yes, astounding level of neglect over the last year.
That stops my heart for a millisecond. Even the most powerful among us must answer to someone. And in my case, it's my godfather, Yates Harcourt. He was my father's business partner. They built Harrington Harcourt and Associates into one of the most powerful investment banks in the U.S., He still sits as the director of the board, which means he's the one person I need to keep happy. All right, I'll have Tony send over an early Christmas gift.
He's on a yacht in the South Pacific right now,
Mother says. Oh, well, then, for Christmas, I tell her. I'll have her find out where he'll be and I'll, I don't know, fly a chef in to make him dinner or something.
It's going to take a lot more than that, I'm afraid,
she says. She's not afraid, by the way. She loves being the one to give me this news.
We're all going to his estate in Newport for Christmas. All the Harringtons and all the Harcourts will be there. That includes you, and you'd better show up with incredibly thoughtful gifts for the entire family and your hat in your hand.
My shoulders drop. There's no way I'll have this deal wrapped up by then.
If the thought of spending the holidays with your family isn't enough to get you there, this should. Yates is making the announcement.
The announcement. Not an announcement. He's choosing a successor. My knees feel like they might give way under the weight of that news.
If you're not there, come January, when the board meets again, they'll have finding your replacement on their agenda.
I tap my foot on the plush carpet while I try to think of a way to spin this. Damn, there really isn't a way. There's nothing Uncle Yates likes more than knowing he has the power to crush people, even those who he supposedly loves like a son. I knew I should have been paying homage to him on a regular basis, which is, quite frankly, something I resent having to do. That's why I haven't been doing it. But now, he's about to force my hand. The day does not get easier after wrapping things up with my mother, and it's almost 7 in the evening when I finally leave the office. Having skipped lunch, I'm now ravenously hungry, not to mention completely stressed out. Grabbing my wool coat off the hook, I pull it on, pop my cell phone and keys into the pocket, and open the door. Tony, my spunky assistant, is still there, tapping away on her computer.
All done for the evening, Mr. Harrington.
You might as well call it a night, too, I say, striding past her. Then I remember my mother's threats and turn around. I'm gonna need to find someone to do my Christmas shopping this year. Huge list. And I need extra special items for each person. They have professionals who do that type of thing, right? Her eyes light up.
They sure do. I happen to know the perfect person for the job. She's a real pro, but she's not cheap.
I hide the smirk that's threatening to burst forth. Tony and I don't exactly share the same definition of cheap. Things of quality rarely are, I tell her. The cost is not a concern as long as I have someone with superior taste handling everything for me. My gifts not only have to be presented beautifully, but they also have to be thoughtfully purchased.
Well, how will she know what the people on your list like?
I'll make some notes. You can give her my cell phone number if you'd like. If she's stuck, I'll make myself available to answer a few questions.
I'm sure she won't need to use it often,
Tony assures me. Perfect. Get a hold of her right away and secure her services. Then, I say, after that, go home and enjoy your evening.
Chapter 3. Holly.
Okay, hear me out, because this is my best idea yet, Tony says, refilling our wine glasses. What are the two things you love most?
Faith and chocolate?
Before you inherited a child.
A child who is sleeping right now, so I remind myself to stop at the second glass of wine. I think back to my former life.
Bar hopping and chocolate? I ask.
I have no interest in the bar scene, but if you found me a job tasting chocolates, I'm so in.
No, she says, her nostrils flaring a little. Shopping. You loved shopping.
I'm not following.
My boss needs a personal shopper for Christmas, and I've already told him I know the very best one in Manhattan.
She gives me an open-mouthed smile, clearly expecting me to jump up and down.
Your boss, as in Archibald Snooty Pants the 42nd? I ask, pursing my lips.
She opens her mouth, but I cut her off with one finger in the air. You complain about the man all the time.
It's not like he's a horrible person. He's just a one-trick pony. All work and no play. Plus, it's not like you'll have to work side by side with him or anything. You probably won't even have to see him.
I'm not a personal shopper, I tell her. Unless his family and friends want ramen noodles or discount t-shirts from the guy who sells them out of his trunk in front of my apartment building, I would have no idea what to buy.
Yeah, well, Archie doesn't know that.
She pumps her eyebrows up and down like a comedian.
Tony, you told me the guy was a rich, stuck-up preppy from the Hamptons. While I would love nothing more than to make some extra money, I don't have the foggiest notion how to shop for rich people.
So watch some holiday episodes of Real Housewives and see what they buy each other. He'll tell you how much to spend on each person.
Come on, Hall. It's not brain surgery. It's shopping. You know how to shop. And you need the money.
What if he hates me? I despise feeling so pathetic, but I'm totally out of my league here.
Then he hates you. So what? Believe me when I tell you, Archibald Harrington only thinks about work. You can't take anything he says personally.
Dread slams into me like a wrecking ball. How much do you think I can make? Enough to pay for Christmas and at least the next 3 months of Faith's preschool tuition? How can you pass that up?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?